The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salner & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saunier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to today's Retirement and IRA Show, Q&A edition, as we answer your questions that have been sent in to us by email for the most part. We occasionally take phone calls, but those are usually a bit prearranged, if you will. Today, I'm not sure we have... Jim, is Laura downstairs available for phone calls? Oh,
well, she is. She's in. She's sick, so she's going to answer the phone sick.
Well, you can't catch anything over the phone lines, luckily, so I think we're safe.
No, but we can when we go down and use our phone.
We'll just stay up here. So if you want to call in live at any time on the show, especially if you want to call us ahead of time and set up a soft meeting, if you will, on the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, the phone number to call is 970-530-0556. If we don't get any live callers, we will do our best to start rifling through the pile of questions we've received via email over the past weeks and, in some cases, months. There's some of these questions come up, and we need some clarification from the authors before we can effectively cover them on the podcast. But
keeper of the emails, sometimes...
The keeper.
The keeper's desk is really... This is really starting to frustrate me. We have got to come up with a more convenient and organized manner for me to handle these emails.
How about a system of folders?
I was thinking of that. I was thinking of getting one of those accordion folders.
That seems too that's too many slots. I think we should have a to be answered.
Well, once they get answered, they go to Joe. Mm-hmm. She uses them to write the write-up for mm-hmm. the show on iTunes, adds the person to our email newsletter list, and I think reaches out to them to tell them the show it's going to be on. Mm-hmm. She'll send them an email. And then she sends it to Never Neverland. But anyways, I'm trying to come up with an easier way. This is really starting to be daunting. All these pieces of paper. Okay. I think I have... What's so funny?
Go ahead. Nothing.
You just looked at me and laughed.
Well, the organization system of the three piles that seems to turn into seven piles and then gets reabsorbed into three piles.
I'm trying my hardest here.
No, I get it.
I thought printing them is better than keeping them electronic email because then I never see them. Here, at least I see them. Mm-hmm. But I got to come up with a decent way to organize them. We need staff.
I think Joe can help you with that. We need actually. Joe should put together
we need a production
the five or
staff.
Six questions that will be answered on this show.
She
and
doesn't
right
know
in front
what we're
going
to answer every
she
week.
Can determine it, though.
No, nah, she doesn't do this for a living. She doesn't know. She's a marketing woman. She doesn't
do,
know
do you
what want to
control everything?
Well, I got to. What if she pulled a question that
no, and then
just
she'd let us
no
know
sense.
Ahead of time. She'd let it show us. These are the questions you're going to answer, and we'd actually show up
and answer them.
Be prepared, yeah.
I never thought of that. Mm-hmm.
I'm just throwing that out there as an option.
We'll evaluate it. Okay. But anyways, folks, my name is Jim Solnia, and the other opposing voice was Chris Stein of Colorado State University. He is a finance instructor. I believe he is the Director of Financial Planning. Is that your title?
I am, currently.
Director of Financial Planning at Colorado State University and a Certified Financial Planner. I am Jim Solnia, a Certified Financial Planner, and I direct nothing. I can't even direct a pile of emails, but... together, we formed Jim Solnia and Associates, and we are a retirement planning firm in Fort Collins, Colorado, but we work with people throughout the nation. You are listening to our Q&A show, where we get a bunch of Q's and provide a few A's every week, and I think today my goal is to get through the seven, which is going to be a fat
seven.
I'm aiming high.
You better dive into them quick.
I'm aiming high.
Okay.
Well, one of them is actually two. No, two of them. Is actually one.
One answer.
One answer oh, for the
good.
Two emails. So
perfect.
Seven is more like six. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll bang that double one out real quickly.
Perfect.
So let's jump into this. But if anybody at all has any questions that they would like answered on the show, you can send us an email. You got one of two ways of doing it. Go to our business website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. On the homepage, you'll see a little contact us button. You can click that and a form opens up and you can type your question into that. Or you can be a little more direct, open up your email and type in the send address an email to me. And that is Jim at jimhelps.com. That's Jim at J-I-M-H-E-L-P-S.com. The more info you put in your letter, email, the better it is for us. But if you go over two, three paragraphs, you might start to get to the level where we can't possibly start divining all that data. A lot of you have sent us very long, very detailed emails. And together as a team, we don't have the time to go through that because we are practicing financial planners. Chris also teaches financial planning at Colorado State University, and he has six kids and a wife. And I go home and tend to my garden, so I'm really busy when I'm out of here. And
especially in the winter time.
The winter time. A little more time in the winter, I'll freely admit. I did cover my strawberries, though, last week, and that took some time. But we are busy, and I think if you have a long question, break it up into several smaller ones. Send us one. When we answer that, write us back. Thank us for answering that. Here's a follow-on, something like that.
Yeah.
You might get through the queue quicker. Just a little bit of hint from the keeper of the emails that less
perfect.
Is more. It's like me, pithy on this show. Very, very brief on my verbiage. That goes a long way. Chris, on the other hand, y'all know if you listen to this show, he never shuts up. He just goes on and on and on. It's like, yeah, hurry up. But pithy, Chris. Remember that. Ten words or less. Okay. Here is our first question.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start with a Social Security question.
Okay.
And then we'll jump into non-Social Security questions. I understand. He's a Wisconsinite.
Okay.
I just want to point out the state.
Mm-hmm.
Cheesehead.
Fabulous.
Football teams got a little problems this year. But same with the Patriots. My God, did you see that yesterday?
I did.
Oh, my Lord. You didn't call me and console me.
I was still trying to wrap my mind around Gronkowski being back as a defender.
Yeah, so is half of Boston. I've been listening to the Boston stations today. God bless Tune In Radio, and they are none too pleased with Gronk being out there. But anyways, a Wisconsinite.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the earnings test for those under their full retirement age, but my question has to do with the period of time between filing for your benefit and the arrival of your first payment.
Okay.
I plan to file later this year at age 64. My current income is over the allowed amount for the earnings test.
Mm-hmm.
so I am going to use the grace year provision. My birthday is on the 23rd of the month. Let's say I file on July 23rd, the day before my birthday, just to point that out, July 24th is mine. But let's say I...
So did you submit this question to us?
Yes. I pretended I was from Wisconsin, sent this email out, and then...
pretended you were 64.
Hoped I would be the one to read it as well. Let's say I file on July 23rd for benefits. My first payment would arrive on the fourth Wednesday of September. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. I presently earn about $7,000 a month, which is well over the monthly allowed amount for the grace year. Could I work at my current job in August and not be penalized for earning that much, or does the monthly earnings test begin when I actually file in July? I think he's asking, does it begin when he gets the check, or does it begin when he files? If I can earn that much in August, I would rather quit work at the end of August instead of July. It's a lot of money to leave on the table, his $7,000 a month salary.
Yep.
Okay, to answer that?
I can.
And could you, before you go on, because I got to get a word in edgewise, because once you start, that's it. It's like on autopilot. Can you just explain to people what that grace year is for those new listeners who don't know what you may be talking about, and a brief description of what the earnings test is?
Okay. So we'll do them in reverse order. The earnings test, when you're under your full retirement age, if you're claiming Social Security benefits of any kind, you are subject to an earnings limit over which you will have your benefits reduced depending on the type of benefit you're receiving and exactly how old you are. We won't go into the details, but that's the essence of the earnings test. Right now, for in 2018, that earnings test is $17,040. That's the earnings limit. If you earn over that and are claiming a retirement benefit, they'll withhold $1 for every $2 over that amount until the year of that you reach full retirement age. Then the rules are a little bit different, but this person is clearly talking about the $17,040 limit that exists right now. The grace year is intended to be available to people who work part of the year before claiming and then retire and claim, but earned enough early in the year that they completely blow past the 17,000 figure. So in order to accommodate that, they allow you on a one-time election in the first year that you are claiming benefits to elect a monthly application of the earnings test rather than that yearly amount. So that $17,040 in 2018 would go to equivalent is $1,420 per month. So you can elect to have the earnings test applied that way, and that's what they're talking about. Now, what he's running into is an issue of when do I collect my benefit versus when is the benefit paid to you? In other words, when have you earned the benefit, and then when does the when do the dollars actually get deposited in your account? I was about to say, when do they send you the check, but they don't send checks anymore. It's all electronic deposits. Well, if he files in July, his benefit beginning month will be August. The August benefit will be paid in arrears in September. And because he was born in the last third of the month, it'll come during the fourth Wednesday of September. So that's when he made that comment. That was because they determine the day of your benefit deposit based upon what day of the month you were born. If you're in the first 10 days of the month, you receive your check on the second Wednesday of the month. Well, receive your deposit. If you're born between the 11th and the 20th, you receive your benefit deposited on the third Wednesday of each month. And if you're like this listener who was born on the 23rd, so any birthday that's from the 21st to the end of the month is going to be paid on the fourth Wednesday of each month. So that's why when he makes that comment, he's going to receive his first benefit payment in September, specifically on the fourth Wednesday of September. That's true, but that benefit is actually for August. So if he continues to work in August, earning $7,000 that month, he is clearly going to violate the earnings test, which he's trying to avoid. The only way to avoid that would be to stop working at the end of July, claim a benefit for August, which is then paid in September. If he absolutely wants to work in August, he should ask the Social Security Administration to start his benefits September 1st, which would then make his first benefit payment the fourth Wednesday of October. So this is a bit of a challenge for some people who live paycheck to paycheck because they have to kind of try to time when do I get my last check from work versus when do I get my first Social Security benefit payment. And there can be, you know, almost a two-month period there. If you're born in the last third of the month, it's worse than if you're born in the first third of the month. But you might have to go a little time without receiving the equivalent of a paycheck, if you will, if you want to consider Social Security as a substitute for your paycheck. So the earnings test applies in the month the benefit is paid, and the month that month, if you have earnings that exceed the earnings test, you will have the offset applied to you. So it is not based on when you receive the check. The check is actually in arrears. It is when you earn the benefit. It's that month that the earnings test applies. So I think we covered everything on there. I even got to throw in the old, depending on the day of the month you were born, you'll get your deposit on the second, third, or fourth Wednesday of the month. And Jim's now disappearing, even though I'm done answering this particular question. So, so I'll remind everybody while we're waiting for Jim to come back. There must have been something urgent come up. But I'll remind everybody that if you want to call in and ask a question live on the show, we do have some live listeners. The show we record and broadcast live on Monday afternoons typically, although during the holiday season, which we're in right now, it's December 10th as we're recording this now. During the holiday season, sometimes the schedule can get a little bit varied, if you will. But if you are listening in about the 3 o'clock Mountain Time hour, on Mondays, we are generally broadcasting live and can take live calls. The phone number, again, to call in to do that is 970-530-0556. That's 970-530-0556. So I'm going to go on to another Social Security question while we wait for Jim to step back into the room. We've had a couple of questions come in that the answer is actually quite simple. The first question, we have a listener that wrote in that they are actually living in Germany. They are receiving a widow's benefit based on their spouse passing away some time ago, but ran into a problem filing some forms, and now Social Security wants to withhold their benefit. I'm going to put that answer on pause right now, so that I can then read a second question where both of these have exactly the same answer. The second question comes in from someone here living in the United States, but that question is, they were in the process of applying for retirement benefits online, but inadvertently answered some questions about disability rather than retirement, and they want to know how to withdraw their application and start over, kind of reset the process. Well, the answer to both of those, actually, is to reach out to Social Security directly. These are very specific procedural problems that need to be solved, some paperwork issues, and there's really no third party, us or anyone else, that's going to be able to help you with this. You're going to need to contact Social Security directly. What we don't advertise on the show very often is actually their customer service number. They do have a toll-free customer service number that they do respond to. It is not generally too big of a problem to get a hold of somebody through this number. And that number is 1-800-772-1213. That number is 1-800-772-1213. And that would be where you should start with any of these kind of paperwork or procedural issues. If you end up getting an answer there that you don't like, it's a good idea to reach out to someone for clarification that if the rules are being applied correctly. But in both of these cases, these are paperwork processing issues, and that number is going to be the best place to start. After that, they sometimes will request that you go in and speak to someone face-to-face. And in that case, you'll have to contact, they'll set up an appointment at your local Social Security office, which would be difficult for the person who is in Germany right now in that question that I mentioned. So hopefully in that case, they can help them over the phone and maybe have some forms clarified. But the best first step is to contact them on that 800-772-1213 number and follow up from there. And then if you run into a brick wall or they're telling you things that don't seem to be quite right the way you understand them rules-wise, reach out to somebody, you know, some people like us, and we can clarify that, yes, they are giving you advice that is consistent with the rules, or no, we don't believe they're giving you correct information. You might want to ask to speak to a manager and hear, and I'll usually direct you to the program operations manual or POMS manual with the part of the rules that might apply to you. So I went ahead and answered those other two questions since
you had
left the room. And
do you have those printed emails with you?
No, I spouted them by memory because you took them from me.
That means they're lost in this pile.
They're lost forever.
I'll try to find them so we can reach them. So, perfect. Yeah. Can I have that one back?
You may.
Thank you. All right. This high-tech office. But we are a practicing financial planning office, and we're actually working as we record these. And I was pulled out of the office for two important matters that, unfortunately, I was the only one who could address.
Oh.
So thank you, Chris, for that.
Sure. I'm glad you got those addressed.
Yeah, you got it. What's so funny?
Well, I'm glad you got those things solved and addressed,
yes.
Even though you left me abandoned here all alone.
I did. I'm sorry, but you carried it's on like good. A professional. It's funny you mention that you were just saying if you get an answer from Social Security that isn't what you expected and you know you're right, to come see us or call us.
Yeah.
We had someone do exactly that, and I want to share with you the email she sent us.
Oh, I'm excited to hear as well.
So, this is totally random. It's not part of our repertoire for today. But this email came in on Saturday, and it referenced someone who came in and did our Social Security analysis.
Mm-hmm.
She was a Coloradoan, and she came into the office, unlike a lot of people who hire us and work with us over the phone. She actually came in.
Mm-hmm.
And what she had done and what her question was, she was trying to decide. She turned her full retirement age in June.
Of this year?
June of this year.
Okay.
And she filed for her benefits.
Yes.
And then she started to have second thoughts
as
time went on.
Mm-hmm.
Started listening to us and understanding more from our podcast that Social Security was earmarked more for the older her, not the younger her, and she didn't need the money now.
Oh, so she became attracted to the benefits of delaying.
Correct. So she wanted to know what this would look like. So what we ended up doing is we manipulated our planning software and we showed her this is what your benefit would look like if you paid it back. This is what it would look like if you suspended your benefit instead of paying it back. And she interrupted me. She says, what do you mean suspend my benefit?
Mm.
And I said, well, you are past your full retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
You're only 6 months into claiming almost. I said, because by time you file any payback paperwork, you'll already be into January payment. And I said, let's just pretend you're 6 months in before you could either suspend or pay back.
Right.
If you pay back, you would have to pay back the 6 months that you've already received. But another option would be to simply pay back nothing, just suspend your benefits, and they will begin growing your benefit at the delayed retirement credit, which is 8% a year, but paid monthly. So what does that come to per?
It's 2/3 of 1% per month.
So she would get 2/3 of 1% per month between 66 and, wasn't a half, it was 66 and eight months at this point, because her full retirement age was, I think, 66 and 2 months or 4 months. So I said it would start 6 months into that, but you would get essentially 3.5 years of delayed retirement credits, or pay back 6 months and get all of your retirement.
Almost
credits.
4 years. So almost we're talking about maybe 4 or 5 months of extra benefits.
That's it.
Of extra delayed retirement
credits.
When we
crunched those mm-hmm. numbers and she saw the difference in the two mm-hmm. and she saw the amount we estimated she'd have to pay back, she thought, same thing I thought, it's not
suspend.
Worth it.
No, just suspend.
Absolutely. Wasn't yeah. going to be worth it. Wasn't yep. going to be worth it. Yep. So she said, I never knew you could do that. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I says, well, you absolutely can. I said, the unfortunate thing is the person at the Social Security office is probably not going to think you can.
Right. You predicted their confusion.
I predicted what happened.
Oh, and that really came to
absolutely. So she said, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. I said, well, file and suspend is a strategy that's no longer allowed. But the suspension of benefits is still allowed. It's just that they changed the rules that if you suspend your benefit, it blows up a strategy called file and suspend. And so many people think the ability to suspend benefits is no longer allowed. So I just prepped her mm-hmm. that the person at the desk is not probably a highly paid, highly educated Social Security expert. You have to ask for the... My mind just went blank.
Technical
expert. Mm-hmm. You have to ask for the office.
Well, hopefully you'll get someone. I would, to give them a little, I don't know, kudos, I think more than 50% would have given her the right answer, but probably not much more. In my experience.
What percent did you say?
I think more than 50%, like 51 or 52.
She got the 48.
She got the
48.
Had no idea so the chances are good, but it's not like nobody knows.
True.
I think about half of them are catching on that this is still allowed.
So here's the email mm-hmm. she sent.
Okay.
Can you give Jim this message? She sent this email to Laura. Mm-hmm. I went to the Social Security office, and she went to the Fort Collins one. They're usually pretty good. Remember Greeley?
I think it all depends on who you get.
Greeley, Colorado folks, they just screwed up everything every time we sent clients there. But it begins. I went to Social Security on Friday to mm-hmm. see about suspending my benefits as Jim and I discussed. Mm-hmm. The woman at the desk told me I could not do that. She said I had to pay my benefits back first. I told her I want to speak with a technical expert mm-hmm. or at least someone who fully knows the information I was needing. Mm-hmm. She told me there was no one in the office I could talk with. I want you to address that. Clearly, the woman she was working with, maybe there wasn't. I thought every office has one.
They do. They all have a manager, and at least. But most, especially of the size of Fort Collins or bigger, is going to have a technical expert available. Even if it's not physically located in there, it's someone they all have a regional technical expert that they can contact. But almost all offices of size have on staff an experienced what they refer to as the technical expert. But there, I will tell you my feeling, given the responses that a lot of people get, is that they are trained to provide, just like you go in anywhere and you ask for the manager, they know it's not to talk about how great the experience has been. It's to complain about something. So they've all been trained to provide resistance to those requests. So she got the initial resistance. Oh, sorry, there's nobody for you to talk to, which is unfortunate and crap, in my opinion. But
government bureaucracy.
Yeah. Well, even a retail store you go into, a lot of times they try to push you off a little bit at first. So you have to be insistent.
So she continues.
Yes.
So I then, again, remember, she just mm-hmm. ended it with, I was told there was no one in the office I could talk with. Mm-hmm. So I then told her again that suspending my benefits without paying them back was an option. Mm-hmm. She quickly retorted, I like how this is written.
Wow.
She quickly retorted that she would print me out the information that I need from the Social Security website to prove she was correct.
Oh. How'd that go?
And guess what? She writes. Mm-hmm. I stood there for 10 minutes mm-hmm. watching her, and I noticed she was intently reading her screen. I asked her, how much longer is this going to take for you to print out what I need? Now, she ends it there. If it was me, mm-hmm. I would have said to her, how much longer for you to print out what I need for you to prove I'm wrong? That's how I would have said it. She looks at me and said, Wow, it looks like you can suspend your benefits without paying them back. And I'm just reading the info now so I can learn about it.
Oh my goodness.
I contained myself and tried not to high-five or laugh and blurt out, you people might want to get some training on this area.
Yeah.
Nor did I look at her and express, ha, 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 ha. So
that's the gracious approach.
Yes. Anyway, she wanted to share that with us. Mm-hmm. I thought I would share that with all our listeners because this woman is a real case. This email just literally came in today. And when you mentioned that, this has got to be, Chris, I know we don't keep count, but I would say conservatively speaking, the 10th email from someone who said they kept getting the wrong answer from Social Security.
On something which is, this is not a super complicated rule. I admit there are some things about Social Security that are really complex and difficult to understand, even for someone who studies it all the time. The simple rule that you can suspend your benefits at any time after you have reached your full retirement age has always been the case, always, and there's been nothing that has changed about that. This isn't a new rule. This is something that for some reason, some folks either didn't know existed in the first place, which is, this is a basic rule that's been around for a very long period of time, or they misunderstand the change that happened January 1st of 2016 that attach some strings to the suspension, which is if you suspend any auxiliary benefits like spousal benefits or dependent benefits get shut off as well, which they didn't used to. That's the one change. But the ability to suspend continues on. As we speak, there's no grandfathering. The only rule is the same rule that's always been, as long as you've reached your full retirement age, you can suspend. There's no reason to ever suspend past age 70 because the benefit for suspension is earning the delayed retirement credits. Those stop at 70. So the general rule is you have the opportunity to suspend between full retirement age and age 70 if you want to. And there's no paying back anything. It's literally just pushing the pause button. And that's the scoop. It's completely different than a withdrawal of your benefit application. That's if you want to hit the reset button and pretend like you never filed. To do that, you do have to pay back all the benefits that you've been paid up to this, up to that point.
And we did with this particular listener, not listener, but, well, she was a listener, but she came into the office. This is a local listener, an LL, a local listener. We did that calculation for her. We showed her, here is the cost of paying it back. Here is the cost of suspending. There is no upfront cost to suspending, but there's an ongoing annual cost and a reduced benefit. In her case, she would have about 6 months less delayed retirement credits by suspending. But she didn't have to come up, which was a pretty substantial amount of money up front. To come up with, Chris, she didn't have to do that. And she also found that she would have to have lived, we crunched the numbers for her, till 85 before paying it back and getting a higher monthly benefit started to exceed not paying anything and just having a smaller benefit. And even though this woman thought she would live past 85, she didn't know how much longer. She chose randomly 95. And when we look at how looked for her at how much more money she would earn over that 10-year period, she couldn't justify taking a massive amount of money now and giving it to Social Security. Right. So suspending for her, she loved that we showed her that.
And she wouldn't have had to go into the office even to do that. You can suspend with a phone call.
Well, she wanted to go in, but even if you call someone, be persistent. This is at least, in my very conservative estimate, the 10th person since the career of the Retirement and IRA Show where we have had people have to really push their point with the Social Security office. So if you do your homework, if you know the rules, if you listen to us on the Retirement and IRA Show, if you read the blog that I created, but Chris pretty much provides all the data to, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, Chris is very knowledgeable in Social Security. He helps people understand this. Do your homework and don't take no for an answer. She wasn't going to take no for an answer.
Clearly. I could tell by the tone of her email.
It's just funny how the clerk must have been, wait here as I go get the information that shows I'm right. I mean, yeah. It's essentially what she said. And 10 minutes later, the woman is reading the screen. She had to have felt embarrassed, that poor worker.
I'm sure. But she's now learned something, and now she'll get better advice moving forward.
Absolutely. Okay. Another question. Mm-hmm. Hi, Jim and Chris. This is a Minnesotian.
Oh. Close to Wisconsin.
Close to Wisconsin.
So
Minnesota.
We were getting all kinds of Georgia before, and now we're getting a bunch of upper Midwest.
Upper northern Midwest. Yeah. I guess they got nothing to do in late fall, early winter because it's so cold.
They're all bundled up writing emails.
They're bundled up writing Retirement Area Show emails. Hi, Jim and Chris. I recently found your podcast and truly enjoy the addition of the EDU podcast discussing the Roth IRA 5-year rules. I remember that. It was one of the first EDU shows we did.
Yeah.
As I'm looking more closely at my own retirement and various strategies, I have a question regarding 401k plans. I currently have two. The first is a former employer that I left, and he's talking about I left in place, he means the 401k, a former employer that I left in place after I quit. So he means he quit the job, but he left the 401k in place there.
Yeah.
And I hired on to my current company, which also has a 401k plan. I am 53. I am looking to retire in the year I turn 55. My question is this. Should I roll over my older 401k plan, his former employer's, into my current 401k plan? And if so, should I do it right away? I know the knee-jerk reaction is yes, and I would dispute that's the knee-jerk reaction. But anyways, the knee-jerk reaction is yes, but I'm not really concerned about the most common answers typically given for doing a rollover. For example, I won't be paying two fees. I won't be paying exorbitant fees. The choice in both 401k plans are okay and doesn't matter which one they're in. I can consolidate. So I added the tone to that. See how I did? I read that with, it's like an artist would read.
Artist.
Well, an actress or whatever they're called. However, I have found at least one good potential reason to do the rollover. Did you know if I roll over the old 401k to the new plan and retire at the age of 55, I will have access to all my 401k dollars without penalty? Yes, we did know that.
We did, and that would be one of the main reasons to consider doing this. One of the main reasons to consider not wasting your time doing this is if you have plenty of money in the 401k at your current employer that would fund your needs between 55 and 59 and a half, at which point the proceeds, the distributions from both would be available to you without an early withdrawal penalty. So not that it's difficult really to do a rollover from your old 401k to the new one, but if you didn't want to bother with it, if you had plenty of money in the 401k at your current employer, I don't know why you'd run out and necessarily do it at this point. It's been fine, other than some of the reasons why they listed it initially, right? Consolidation, making it more simplistic. You don't have to worry about things in two places, those types of things. But
I agree with 100% of what you said. I do want to point out one thing. I thought you were going to pick up on it. He wrote at the age of 55. It's not at, it's in the year you turn
55.
Well,
he said that at
55.
The beginning. He said he's going to retire
true,
in the year he turns 55.
Then he said,
55.
If I roll over the old 401k to the new plan and retire at the age of 55, you can actually retire, listener, in the year you turn 55. In other words, you could still be 54. But as long as you, let's say your birthday's December, whatever the hell today is, today's December 12th.
10th.
Let's say that's your birthday, December 10th. You could retire January 1st of this year.
Yeah, not long after you turn 54.
Yeah.
Yep, and still qualify for
And still qualify, even though you're 54, because you retired or separated from service in the year you turned 55.
And or this, later.
or later.
As long as it's that year or later.
Mm-hmm. And this rule is age 50 for public sector and public safety, not public sector workers, public safety. Mm-hmm. workers. So firemen, police officers, government mm-hmm. G-men like the FBI, the Department of...
Homeland Security.
Homeland Security, thank you. I'm just trying to figure out other departments. Who are those guys who run around? Alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Those guys. Marshals.
U.S. Marshals.
U.S. Marshals, yeah. Mm-hmm. Ever watch that show on U.S. Marshals based in Kentucky called Justified?
No.
You might want to watch that. Justified was a good flick. It was about
was
the
it because
Marshals.
It was from Kentucky, or is it because of the
I started watching Justified long before I thought about moving to Kentucky.
Oh.
But if this show is remotely accurate, there's a lot of hicks in Kentucky. But at least in the part of Kentucky they were basing it out of. But it's a really good show. I liked it. It's called Justified. You might want to watch it.
Okay. Not heard of it. But I'll look it up.
Yeah. Everyone who I mentioned it to is like, oh, I loved that show. It was a good show.
There's a lot
guy
of good
named
shows on now.
Timothy O'Plaint or O'Pellin, I don't know. Timothy something. O something is the main actor. It was good.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, you'll like it. Okay, so we did want to point that out, but now he continues.
Oh, more. There's more.
There's more. As you are very knowledgeable in all things retirement, and I think he meant me as in you, not you as in you, because it does say Jim and Chris, but I think he meant as Jim is knowledgeable, but he wrote, as you are very knowledgeable in all things retirement, I'm wondering if you can help me understand any reason why I would or would not roll my 401k into the old plan. Thank you in advance for any help. I really appreciate the time and
into
energy.
The old plan or into the new plan?
Excuse me. Very good. Rolling the old plan into the new plan. I have a reason why you may not, and I'll get into that. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's several reasons why you may not. Do you want to opine on any pro or con reasons?
Well, the first thing you always want to consider is if there's an offering in your old 401k that's not available in the new 401k. That's at the top of my list for a reason not to do it. Now, he mentioned that either you embellished the question or he mentioned that the offerings were the same, that there wasn't anything mm-hmm. missing. But if that's the case, you always want to check that, because if there's something you'd like to remain invested in that is no longer available in the 401k, the new one that you want to move it into.
What do you mean, did I embellish? He wrote, the choices in both 401k plans are good.
Okay. Which way is that paper aiming? It's towards you and the wall. I can't read. I can't
see
what's
on there. Well, I just wanted
there.
To point out. No,
and
he
sometimes
did
you embellish it, like those strange George Clooney comments that you have.
People write how.
No, they don't.
Eerily similar to George Clooney. I look.
Not one time has that happened.
I'm telling you.
So
go ahead, baby Huey.
So that's the type of embellishment that I'm talking about. So that's the number one thing I would worry about. And then second from that would be differences in plan fees. That you've got a concern there where somehow your old 401k is more efficiently run. Maybe it's at a much larger employer. They've got some economies of scale, and maybe the fees are a little more attractive. That would be
absolutely
a second thing for me.
Especially if you have a very small 401k. Remember the email we got from a gentleman who wanted to do the backdoor, and he would have the backdoor Roth contribution? So he had to get rid of his IRA in order to do that, and he wanted to move it into his 401k, but it was a commission 401k, and he was going to pay thousands of dollars to put that money in.
Yeah.
So I would agree, if he has a small current employer 401k, and they're very rare, but they are out there, and you are going to have to pay a commission to put money into that 401k and buy your investments, I'd be very hesitant to do that unless you absolutely needed access to that money before age 59 and a half. And 10% early withdrawal penalty is going to be less than what the total taxes would have been owed.
Fees.
The other way around. Fees.
The fees.
Not taxes. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. If the fees, the commissions that you were going to do it were lower than what you're going to pay in a 10% early withdrawal penalty by not doing it,
then it makes sense.
Then it would make sense. But I have another reason why he may want to pause before quickly pull in the knee-jerk reaction and, or not knee-jerk reaction, just the decision. He has to look at access to the money. Some 401ks restrict.
I like where you're going with this.
How often you can access money in a plan. Some will charge you to access the money. So it would do you no good to move that over if they're only going to limit you to one withdrawal a year. Or there was the company that we recently worked with, well, a gentleman who worked for a company that recently came into the office, another local Coloradoan, worked for a national energy company who has drilling operations out in the Eastern Plains. Every withdrawal
$40,
was
right?
$40.
Yeah.
So you have to weigh that against the 10% early withdrawal penalty. And if you don't need access to the money, why bother moving it and paying money to access it? So you have to be careful on
these
the
are all those things
to
you have to
access the money. And then you would want to look at beneficiary options. Make sure the new 401k is very receptive, especially if you have a trust as beneficiary of any of your retirement accounts. Some 401ks will not allow a trust to be beneficiary of a retirement account. So you would want to make sure that that is still allowed. But I think the most basic reasons, we kind of went out on a limb there to come up with those two what ifs. But as long as the investments are similar and the fees are similar, I think the ability to access, even if he doesn't think he would need it, Chris, I think that would be an important ability to just have that flexibility and to be consolidated into one 401k provider rather than two. So I can see moving it, but I would look at these little issues. Total cost of the 401k, investment choices, those are the two main ones, but also beneficiary designations. If you have any odd beneficiaries like a trust, make sure that they will allow that. And then access to the money. Make sure that new 401k isn't going to charge you every time you want to get access to that money. Okay.
Perfect. Which all these little details that seem troublesome would go away if we could all adopt the URA.
URA, Universal Retirement Account.
Yep.
Yep. I like
Forget
that.
All these different convoluted separate ones. Just have one URA. You can put money in. Employers can put money in. Anyway, that's a whole topic for another show.
But it is.
We're proponents of the URA.
URA. URA was my creation, Chris. Like saying it, URA, like a Marine.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although I give credit to President Obama. He came up with, not him, but his administration, with the best, I wish I thought of it, the MIRA.
Yeah.
Short-lived sure. MIRAs, by the way, so they're gone.
Yeah.
But M-Y-R-A, MIRA, with the little Y, but a capital M, R, and A.
That was pretty good.
My retirement account. I like that better than the URA.
Just kind of flows off the tongue. Yeah, rolls off the tongue a little bit easier.
A little bit easier.
But URA is pretty easy.
Okay. Third question.
Well, no, this is fifth question.
Oh, that's right.
I did three.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Does it make sense to take withdrawals from my 401k after I retire in 4 years? While income tax rates are still low, my goal would be to push my wife and I into the 12% bracket by living off of savings while we did this. So does it make sense? This is his whole email was that. And I need more information as I was looking
at this. Did
he say
he doesn't need it, but he was considering doing it?
That's what I just don't know. And it's the way he wrote, my goal would be to push me and my wife into the 12 bracket. So I think what he's talking about is he wants to fill the 12 bracket while he lives off of savings. So I assumed that he has substantial enough brokerage accounts, bank accounts, to live off of those assets and essentially declare no income and then fill those lower brackets
with
withdrawals from his IRA and 401k. And I have a problem. I think you should put the money in a Roth IRA.
I was going to say, this sounds like a half of a Roth conversion.
Exactly. So Chris and I are assuming, listener, we could be totally off base, but the way you worded it, You were going to live off of savings while you did this, and the intent was to have those distributions push you into the 12% bracket. So that tells me a lot of your non-retirement account assets, what we call the maybe taxable assets, are in a bank account where you can live off of it and essentially have no tax liability because it's already taxed principal you're spending from the bank. And that you thought, rightfully, you're trying to look forward and you thought, wow, I'm wasting these lower brackets and I want to fill them while tax rates are low. Mm-hmm. I think he nailed that. But what he missed the boat on is you don't want to just take the money, listener, out of your 401k and pay taxes at low rates, because now that money goes from an always taxable account, which I admit is bad, the 401k, which is going to be subject to required minimum distributions when you turn 70 and a half, what we like to call RIDs, required income distributions, because every dollar from a 401k or every dollar from an IRA is always subject to taxes, unless it's after-tax basis, but that's rare, but it can be in there. But the vast, vast majority of the monies in those accounts, Chris, are always subject to income taxes. So I think he thought or was looking forward enough and realized, hey, taxes are probably the lowest they're going to be for a while. I have plenty of room in these lower brackets because I'm living off of my bank assets. Let me start taking money out of my 401k and filling those lower brackets with income, paying taxes on it. I like the strategy, but I don't like the strategy. The strategy should be, if you don't need the money because you're living off of your other assets, then you would want to take that money out of the 401k and move it to a Roth IRA. You don't want to move it to a Roth 401k, and I'll explain in a minute why. You want to move it to a Roth IRA, or you might want to move the entire 401k into an IRA and then start converting from there. The tax liability, listener, whether you took a distribution or did a conversion, it's going to be identical.
Right. But the future growth is treated very differently.
Exactly. The money inside a brokerage account may be subject to taxes. It may not. We call it maybe. We have an always taxable, never taxable, and maybe taxable. You're going to take an always taxable asset and turn it into a maybe taxable asset. Not bad. But an even better one is to take an always taxable asset and turn it into a never taxable asset. So the entire growth of the money you put into the Roth IRA will be 100% tax-free, whereas the growth in the regular brokerage account, the you're just taking the money out and not putting it into a Roth, you're just putting it in your account, that growth may be subject to capital gains taxes, may be subject to income taxes on the interest and dividend distributions, may not. But what we do know is the Roth IRA will not be subject to income taxes if taken out in a qualified withdrawal later in his retirement. Mm-hmm. So I like his thought process. I just would have preferred a Roth. What are your thoughts?
Totally on board. Same recommendation. If he doesn't actually need it, those monies will be better housed in a Roth IRA than just being distributed out and left outside of the Roth. Because never taxable is always better than maybe. Because maybe the best case is it's not, whereas never is always never. As long as you use a qualified withdrawal, which is pretty easy to do at this of this person's age, that's not going to be a problem.
Okay. Well, hopefully this gentleman found that bit of advice helpful. Do we have time for the last one?
Sure.
It's a Social Security one.
Okay.
Back to that. Okay. This is a listener. Oh, we're moving south. Midwest, but south.
Tennessee.
Outlaw Josie Wales was from there.
The Outlaw Josie Wales?
Mm-hmm. What was the home state of Josie Wales?
Oklahoma.
Uh-uh.
Josie Wales. Missouri.
Missouri.
That's right.
Missouri Ruffian.
That's right.
Okay, fine state of Missouri. I want to retire at 62.
Okay.
I would like to then work part-time with my brother-in-law.
Okay.
And do self-employed independent insurance inspections. I guess he's going to be a home inspector.
Mm-hmm.
How much can I earn without affecting my Social Security income?
Mm.
Can business be in spouse's name? I think what he's asking is, can I put the business in my spouse's name since she will be helping me? Can I put it in just her name? I would like to continue working and make my earnings limit. I think he wants his cake and eat it too.
Yeah, and the way I interpret that is he'd like to hide his income under his wife's name to avoid the earnings test.
He said he wants to go up to the 17,000 earnings limit.
But he wants to do that using his part-time RN job. So if he fills the part-time RN job with that 17,000.
Oh, is that what RN meant? I didn't know what RN meant, so I skipped it. I want to retire at 62 as an RN.
Yep, and that's why they're doing home insurance inspections, those health insurance. When someone signs up for life insurance, they come and take your blood pressure and check your weight and all that kind of stuff.
Oh.
That's what I believe he's talking about.
Okay, then I was off base. I thought it was going to be a home inspector.
Could be, but I think it's because it's connected to RN, I think it's one of those come to your house and give you an insurance examination for underwriting. That's my. But either way, it doesn't matter what he's doing. He could be out digging ditches. Self-employed, if he is out there digging ditches, but he puts the business under his wife's name and reports it under her Social Security number, that's not on the up and up, first of all. So could he get away with it? I'm not even going to comment on that because that's fraudulent in my, you know, technically. So he knows the answer to his question. How much can I earn? Because he names it the $17,000 in 2018. That number is $17,040. Next year, good news, is going to go up by $50 a month to $17,640. That's how much he can earn without it affecting his Social Security, whether it's from employment for an employer or it's wages as a being self-employed, from work as a self-employed person. If he shifts that employment or shifts those wages to someone else who's not actually doing the work, that's on him. That's his own decision. That's going to be not, again, on the up and up. So he knows the answer to the question. $17,640 in 2019 is how much he can earn without being subject to the earnings test.
But if the business was just in the way, let's say it was legitimately set up before he even retired, and it was up and running, and the wife fully owned it, I don't think he could just work for it and not be paid anything, can he? I don't think Social Security looks at that on self-employed people. They do look at the hours you contribute, and if your work is, I think they call it meaningful or required.
Right, it's
or something.
Not. It's going to hold up until they investigate. If they never investigate, he got away with it. But if he gets caught, there's going to be severe ramifications there. So I wouldn't recommend doing it.
Okay.
But it's just he needs to combine whatever wages from his employer relationship as an RN with his earnings from this side business he's talking about, the combination needs to remain under the $17,640 limit for 2019. We're close enough to 2019. I'm going to spout the 2019 numbers. Sound good?
Excellent.
So did we actually get through the pile we wanted to today? That
we
was
did.
Six or seven questions
we
or
did.
So.
We
That's
got through
nice.
It all.
And we're a minute and a half from 60 minutes. So we've
Excellent.
Stayed within our 1 hour target.
Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to this week's show. Again, it was the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A version. You send in the Qs. We provide the As. If you have any questions, go to our website, Jim Helps. That's jimhelps.com. Or send me an email directly. You can send it to jim@jimhelps.com. We will put it in our fine filing system, which seems to be randomly printed emails strewn across
my desk. We'll try
to
improve it.
We're going to try to improve this. And we'll get to your email question as soon as we can and hopefully get it answered or at least get you pointed in the right direction. But we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in the state of Colorado. Chris also teaches financial planning at Colorado State University, local college here in Northern Colorado. So if anybody throughout the United States was interested in chatting with a retirement planning firm, see how our firm may be able to assist you as you plan your retirement, don't hesitate to reach out and get a hold of us. Sound fair?
Perfect.
Perfect. And again, just go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's jimhelps.com. You can schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion phone call, and that will allow us to chat a little, see if there's a way our firm can help you. If I feel there is a way our firm can help you, I'll explain how. If I don't think we would be a good fit and we wouldn't be able to help you, I'll explain why.
Excellent.
All right.
So I want to thank everybody for joining us this week, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.